Okay, I just looked at something on TikTok called Beautiful House Theory. It's just this girl basically coming up with this thing that has been around forever, but putting a name to it, where it's when someone's so attractive that you can't register an attraction to them. Like, you can't be attracted to them, but you know that they're so hot.
Right. That's with me with, like, most hot people.
Yeah, who's, like, the number one person for you that you think this applies to?
Chase Crawford. He's so pretty.
Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
For me, I'm like, and it's too much. But then I surprised myself because I'm attracted to Chris Hemsworth. And I was like, that's a shock.
I personally don't think Chris Hemsworth is that objectively hot. I actually just don't really find it. I don't really get it with him. I think he's so generic.
He's got these pretty little eyes.
I just don't register buff blonde men as hot. I just don't think he's that hot.
Maya has a prejudice against blondes.
But then there are, like, blondes I do think are hot, so here we are.
Wow, but they're the exception, not the rule.
They're the exception, not the rule. I mean, I'm shocked you didn't say Jacob Elordi, because this is someone you say that about.
No, I don't think that, I don't think that he's, I can acknowledge, yes, but I actually don't think he's, like, so attractive that it makes me, I think he is too much like Slenderman.
Oh, like, you think he's creepy.
Like, I think he's like a tree.
I think he fits it for me, because I can't see myself hooking up with him. But I think he's really hot. Like, every time I see him on screen, I'm like, wow. In Euphoria, like, I know he's awful, but I think he's sexy.
For me, that's like, I understand and I respect it, but there is something about him that feels amiss. And, like, it's not like I'm like, oh, he's so pretty that I can't even think about him like that.
Yeah.
Something's amiss. Sorry to be sexist to men.
I really pined for Chase Crawford when I was younger. Like, he's not my type anymore, but I was attracted to him. I'm trying to think. I guess, like, Jamie Dornan from 50 Shades of Grey. Like, I just don't really get it. He's like good looking, but it's in a way that I just don't think is hot. But I think it might just be a matter of type. Like, I don't know.
But I also think, like, an aesthetic kind of, like, appreciation is not necessarily the same as attraction.
Zayn. I think Zayn is an objectively very attractive person, but I think maybe too attractive for me to be like, oh. But I don't, yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is just a question of taste, because he's just not my type.
Yeah, and sometimes I'm like, maybe my brain is filtering out really hot people, because I'm like, well, obviously out of my league.
Well, I think that's the point of Beautiful House Theory, is that you're like, well, I would never even consider, because they're so hot.
Right.
So I don't know. It's not like I think Jamie Dornan's that hot.
Why is it a beautiful house?
I think it's just like you're walking by and you're like, wow, that's a nice house, but you're not going to, like, go into the house.
No, you're
maybe
like...
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. I didn't finish the video.
Great. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet, the symbiosis of our two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, weekly minisodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps a lot.
I'll do it right now.
Oh, thank you.
I just have to buy a few new phones first, and then I'll do it. I'm actually all the reviews on Spotify.
Yeah, and even the mean ones, which is confusing, but I guess we need to show, like, diversity.
You have to make it look authentic.
Yeah. Maya. Today,
Hannah.
Maya. Today we are talking about chat rooms and cyber sex.
My two favorite things.
I mean, and it's in her Tinder bio?
It's in my Tinder bio. Cybosex.
Sorry guys, we just lost all of our listeners. So in particular, we are talking about the kinds of chat rooms that exist in virtual worlds and multi-user games, and how easily the lines between virtual reality and the real world can get blurred. For people of our generation who grew up while the internet still felt like a lawless land, stumbling across something adult on these kinds of spaces was sort of a rite of passage.
It was easy to stumble upon anything adult anywhere, like in one of my sex ed classes. My teacher was really uncomfortable. He was like this young dude and he had a bunch of us. It was like a co-ed class and he didn't know what to do. So he just gave us a list of terms to look up. And he was like, go to the computer lab and look these up. So we went to the computer lab and I looked up erection. And then like Wikipedia had like a full-blown photo of an erection on it. Simply, what was I supposed to do? And then all these bad kids, I think they were in detention at the same time that I was in the computer room. But they were like, yo, what is that?
Look at that horny nerd.
Yeah, I was like, no. Or like you could just Google boobs. They'd come up.
Blue waffle.
Blue waffle. Two girls, one cup, you know.
Famously. Keeping that in mind, like, for early adopters of the web, the ability to form romantic and sexual bonds with strangers was, like, a novel and sometimes existential experience. Sorry, there is a speedy cat that just ran under the desk we're recording on.
Bye.
Oh, okay, she might be back. So, first we have to talk about technology. So, there's a debate about what qualifies as the first virtual world. I'm using that phrase as like a sort of umbrella term for different kinds of sites and platforms that allow multi-user role play and chatting. So a few different technologies were being developed at the same time, but in general, the first generation of them popped up in the late 1970s. At this point, the quote, like worlds are mostly text-based computer programs and softwares. So not a meta world the way we would imagine today.
Boring. Ones and zeros, I'm sure.
Classic. So one of the most popular genres of virtual worlds are MUDs. MUD stands for multi-user dimension. However, initially they were called multi-user dungeons.
Ooh.
Do you want to take a guess at why?
Okay, I have two theories. One, that they were like so deep in the web that they're considered a dungeon, like they're like cavernous. Or that they're sexual in nature, it's like a sex dungeon kind of thing.
You're wrong for both. But I like that. Those are both like pretty good guesses. No, so MUDs are called multi-user dungeons because they were created to originally play Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, see, and that makes way more sense. I thought this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
When was Dungeons and Dragons invented?
I'm pretty sure it's from the 70s, like the late 70s, the 80s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Should we look it up just so we...
Well, I know that's why...
Just confirmed it was made in 1974. Whoa, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and because it's kind of beautiful how stereotypically nerdy it is that, like, the minds behind, like, what ended up being pretty, like, revolutionary technology were also really into D&D.
Like, you know, last episode we said that all men just want to see your nudes, but maybe all men just want to play RPG games with their friends.
The men who wanted to play RPG games with their friends would create technology for men who want to see your nudes, which is what we will.
Oh, it's like they're making it for the Chads.
No, they're not making it for the Chads, but as it becomes more popular, the Chads will find their way there. Yeah, MUDs began as platforms for text-based role-playing games where, unlike other forms of like early digital communication, like bulletin board systems, the users on here can basically instant message with one another from across the world, which is really new and exciting. In a guide on the interactive internet, William J. Shevsky writes this, and I think it's kind of cute. He says, interaction was in real time, lag permitting, as if your computer had come alive. Thought it was really cute, like, because we take for granted everything that the internet can do growing up with it. Yeah. The idea of, like, experiencing that for the first time is, like, really sweet. I sound patronizing, but it's sweet.
No, it's like, that's how I feel when I get in airplanes, that people are putting in their earbuds and they're shutting down their windows, and I open my window and I stare out of it and I say, wow, what a marvel, what a miracle. Imagine being the first person to be in an airplane. You'd be like, wow.
And then she walks up and down the airplane and taps on everyone's shoulders and goes, excuse me, can I open this? Opens their windows and goes, look. And then they have to land the plane early because there's an insane woman on
Yeah, board. I'm a flight risk.
Yeah. I can't go into much detail about the technology of MUDs because I am not a woman in STEM and I didn't fully understand it. But from my understanding, they just, you know, required having the right program on your computer. And then from MUDs comes MOOs, which are multi-user dimensions, object-oriented. But to be completely honest, I don't know what the difference is because MOOs are also text-based. And it's not that important. But it's just something that kind of comes into play later in the story.
Yeah, language is confusing. Also, isn't that MUDs?
No, because they just were like, we'll take the M from MUDs and put that. It's like an inter acronym.
Oh, inter acronym.
Yeah,
an interact.
An interactinum.
Online.
So though they began as platforms for gaming, the technology of MUDs start being used, I think, for like universities, businesses. I saw stuff about like the US government and military like trying to utilize some of the technology and other types of enthusiasts who want to like communicate with one another. But for the most part, like popular MUDs are divided into two main categories, social MUDs and gaming MUDs. Mm. And the way I think about each category is that gaming MUDs are kind of like the ancestors of multiplayer role-playing games like World of Warcraft, and social MUDs are kind of like the ancestors of sites like Second Life or Habbo Hotel.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so you're kind of like living in it in the latter one, but in the above one, it's more like, yeah, like an RPG kind of.
Well, yeah, and both you're taking on a character, you're occupying the space, you're like putting all this work in.
But one has like a goal almost, yes, in mind, whereas the other is like a bit more.
It's just about socializing with people and kind of existing in this world.
Right.
So on social MUDs, users would establish friendships and even romantic relationships with one another. And also sexual relationships. If you have any familiarity with online chat rooms, then you know a major facet of them is sex, and it always has been this way. Outside of like your own experiences being on like chat rooms, like thinking back to what these would be, what do you think the appeal of that is? Having like sexy relationships and like conversations with people.
Anonymity, you can kind of be whoever. Your identity isn't known, so you can kind of like explore things that you might not be able to get to explore, or like things that you would maybe have to confess in real life to someone. You don't have to necessarily do online, like it's just kind of accepted because there's no like risk or harm perceived, yeah, out of it. Immediate risk or harm, I guess. I think also, I don't know, if you're someone who's maybe lonely and you don't get that in real life, it offers you the opportunity to have those connections and like build, yeah, them without any kind of social constraints upon you. Yeah, those are the things I can think of. And you can do it whenever from the comfort of your own home. So it's just like ease of access.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like pre-social media, I think one of the main attributes of life online was anonymity. I don't think people really thought about the ways that we would be later presenting ourselves as ourselves on the computer. There's like a famous New Yorker cartoon from the 90s that says, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
It's like the Sex and the City thing where Stanford is in like an online chat room and his name is 9-inch Todd or something. And his friends are like, well, okay.
Well, exactly. And like, this has been the basis of numerous TV and movie plots. Like, You've Got Mail.
Oh my God, worst rom-com of all time.
I know. Cinderella Story. There's an episode of Friends where Chandler is in a role-playing game and he like falls in love with a girl in the game and it ends up being Janice.
Oh, okay. I like half remember this.
Yeah, yeah, he like goes to meet her and they're like, I can't believe who are you talking to, this person?
Oh, and then it's this big reveal.
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate when they try to make the Janice moments earnest.
I love Janice.
I love Janice. I just don't want her to be like earnest.
So this sort of allowed for like a disembodied freedom for people to communicate and interact with one another in a way that was separate from their real lives and oftentimes the way that they wanted to communicate and interact sexually, like you were saying. Do you want to take a guess at like what cyber sex is specifically?
I'm assuming from no experience of my own, the articulating of sexual activities back and forth to one another via text, almost like sexting, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It is very similar to sexting. Like you said, people describing what they're doing to each other and then like you describing your reaction. People get really into like the poetry of it almost.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's why I find sexting really hard, because you're like, you can get involved in it and you're like, oh fuck, I have to like think of something to say that's creative. It's kind of work. It's a little bit of labor.
Yeah, absolutely. And like what I think makes cyber sex different from sexting or phone sex, which would have come before it, is partially that experience of like shared anonymity. Right? Because you're not just going, let me pretend to be myself doing this thing. You're like, you could be anybody and they could be anybody. Mm-hmm. And you get to build a world. So there's a study by Mark Douglas, Charles Edgley, and Dennis Wasko from the year 2000 that explores the idea of cybersex and how it relates to our ideas of the self, which is sort of foreshadowed in the Sasha Gray episode. And they describe sexual expression as rooted in the interplay between the selves that we are, selves in relation to our physical bodies, and ourselves situated in sociological context. And so if we take a very utopian view of it, like you said, cybersex provides the opportunity to leave one's physical bodies, and if you like, your sociocultural context, so that, you know, the only thing that matters is the self, purely in essence.
You're talking to my soul currently.
Yeah, which is but it's interesting.
That's kind of beautiful, yeah.
And like, you express a similar thing about wanting to be freed from these other contexts, like if as a consumer of porn or something, right? So what do you think is so enticing about this? What are the reasons why people might just want to like leave those things behind for them and just have an experience that is about the self?
I think people have these sexual interests and proclivities that maybe they can't bring out to the fullest extent because of these sociocultural boundaries, like because maybe the person they're with doesn't share those, because they have trouble getting a person in general. It's just complete and utter freedom, basically, in a sense, to get straight to that interest without any obstacles.
Yeah, and like, do you think that kind of plays into the experience on like a sensorial level?
Well, yeah, like I was saying in the Sasha Gray episode, so much of sex is psychological, right? So I think being able to tap into only that aspect in some ways and having the excitement of it never be fully almost gratified or never be fully tarnished, like the excitement is still up in the air and it's all psychological. I think there's like a big allure to that.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, there's something like, I thought this was really beautiful when I was reading the way they're talking about it. And like you said, it also lets people experiment with stuff like their sexual and gender identities by choosing characters or avatars of the opposite gender or some who don't have a gender at all. And on some platforms, you could even present yourself as something non-human and free of any attachments that like come with human identity. Like you could be an animal, you could be an inanimate object, like you could be all of these different things.
World equals oyster.
Yes. And in her work writing on cybersex and gender, Sherry Turkle found a lot of MUD users who like gender bent online or who were in heterosexual relationships but had cybersex with users presenting as the same sex. And like, do you think that this can be an experience that doesn't necessarily say something about yourself in the real world? Like, it's like something that you can just
completely compartmentalize.
Yeah, like draw a line between.
Yeah, well, even when you said, oh, someone who might have a partner and then they're talking to someone else online, and I was like, oh, is that kind of like cheating?
Yeah,
and
there's
then I
was a lot like, of debate about that.
I don't really know if it is, because one, there's the physical cheating, and so that's not involved. And then when it comes to emotional cheating, it's like, well, you don't actually know these people, so there is no real other attachment. I guess your eye is wandering. But I mean, I'm a proponent of, I think monogamy is a little crazy. Like, I have been in monogamous relationships, but I do believe that people are inclined towards non-monogamy. And like, people should be allowed to kind of flirt or like, at least find other people attractive when they're in a partnership. I don't know. I think it almost sometimes creates a bit of release in a relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if someone was closeted and they were with someone and they felt like they were kind of stuck in this heterosexual partnership and then they're engaging in this stuff online, I mean, maybe that helps them towards figuring out their identities. I don't know. I think it's just like everything complicated.
Yeah. Depends on the person and the situation. And like you said also earlier, Turkle observed that like it really was like a safe space for people to try out these different things safely from imminent physical harm that could come, especially in 1998 when she wrote it, doing it in the real world. But then also the study I cited earlier also found that most people they spoke to used anonymous cyber sex as an opportunity to present themselves as closer to the beauty standards.
Well, yes, of course. Like catfish a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's not the same as like using someone else's picture.
You're giving like a false,
yeah,
you know, perception of what you look like.
But also like if you're playing in a MUD and you're creating a character for yourself, the characters that people create for themselves aren't necessarily going to be themselves. So you might decide to play a character that happens to be like really tall and blonde and fit.
Well, yes. But also, the term playing in a MUD is so funny.
True.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this makes me think about like, you know, later incarnations of these virtual worlds, which would eventually allow you to create your own avatar. And I always wanted my avatar to like resemble me as closely as possible, but just like a little bit prettier. Like it's kind of like me in my head. Like she has my hairstyle, she has my hair color,
She has really long eyelashes. Mine always had long eyelashes.
Oh my god, I never even thought about it like that.
Yeah.
Why do you think we do this? Like, did you do the same?
Well, yeah, of course. I think everyone just has a picture of what they wish they could look like, usually. Like, not everyone's completely satisfied with who they are in real life. So if you have the opportunity to emphasize your looks, it's fantasy, right? Like, it's all fantasy. So you're playing into a fantasy of what you want to appear like. You're playing into your sexual fantasies and you're playing into your own fantasies of who you want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, yeah, like the authors of the study, they suggested that even though the acts that take place during cybersex are like supposedly all of the self and don't involve like the physical body or social circumstances, like how we define the self can't really be severed by those factors. So it's like we're still going to present ourselves in accordance to those things, even if we're like leaving them behind.
Interesting. Like, we're going to give a version of ourselves. It's just not going to be the exact version of the self.
Well, it's just that, like, we can talk about how we're in this new space where we have the freedom to be ourselves outside of all of these other boundaries that come with your sociological circumstances or your physical body. But because of your lived experience with both of those things, it's going to impact yourself and how you think of yourself and how you want to present yourself. I think a lot of tech utopians at this time liked to present the internet as like this kind of place that was free of all of these things that get in the way in the real world. But ultimately, ourselves online are going to be still impacted by ourselves in the real world.
Oh yeah, it's like we all have limited worldviews. We can't know everything. We're not omniscient. So we have, our worldviews are shaped by what we know, our own memories, who we know. So it's going to, again, like we say, technology mimicking, you know, human bias, for example. It's like, yeah, human behavior and human perception only has so far it can go.
And like, even
for the individual,
you're talking to someone online that you know you're never going to meet to have this cyber sex experience with, even if you can't see them, maybe just knowing that this person has described themselves as like a fit blonde, whatever, you're going to be more attracted to them, even though ultimately they are words on a screen.
I also am thinking, like, if the person's like, so where would you take me on a date? And you live in a place that has one street and it has a Dunkin' Donuts on it, and that's the best place on the street, you're going to be like, I'd take you to Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of like the limited worldview.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like ultimately, like, all of these things work in tandem with each other. I also think, in addition to the anonymity, the appeal of cybersex also comes from its medium. So to quote that study, they describe cybersex as a form of co-authored interactive erotica.
And that's like, what I was thinking when you were talking about this, yeah.
And why do you think that might be a unique experience, like we said, sensorially, to consuming something like porn or reading, like, you know, an erotic novel or something?
Yeah, because I was thinking about it when we were talking about sexting, for example, and I was like, oh, people are basically just having to come up with their own erotica, and like, I'm not an erotic, you know, writer. But I think with this, the difference is that it's almost like a private exchange, and it's in real time, and it, like you said, it's interactive, so what you say will influence what they say, and then what they say will influence what you say back. It's kind of for both of your own gratification, like, both of you, it's a mutual exchange, not just for one person reading, and I think that's really fun.
And you're both indulging in this, like, mutually agreed upon fantasy world that you're meeting in, too.
Honestly, yeah, it's kind of similar to Dungeons & Dragons and, like, RPG games in the sense that you're world building together.
That's beautiful. I think it's kind of beautiful.
Like, two people clasping hands. Me and you together, babe. We're on this sexual journey together.
Except, like, you could never do, like, Dungeons & Dragons you can do in person. If you did this in person, it would be crazy.
This is actually really funny timing because I'm rewatching Pen 15 and I just watched the episode where Maya is on AOL. She goes into a chat room and she thinks that she's talking to some random man who she imagines to be like 35 and like a some like Italian soccer player, like computer guy, and then it turns out that it's a boy from her school who she's friends with and has a crush on her. I just thought that was funny timing, but it's really cute because she's pretending that she's like some hot bitch. I mean, she's also 12, so the way that she does it is so
hot bitch
funny. And his is also so, like, you can tell just from before you even know it's him that it's probably a kid talking to her because their ideas of what is sexy are so limited.
That's like even interesting in that way to like think about finding compatibility with people based off of their writing style and like the work, like how they're choosing to like engage with the space. Like it's, I don't know. I think it's so interesting.
I do think like the written word also does on its own like evoke a different thing from having something visually and audibly like at you, like shown to you.
I think the written word can be so much more exciting in some ways. Like I was saying, sex a lot of the time feels embodied in this psychological, phenomenological experience that, you know, I said seeing just the act of sex, just seeing a penis going into a vagina just doesn't evoke the same fantasy that is surrounding sex. And I think the written word can really have the power to do that.
Well, yeah, it forces you to engage with every little detailed, like you have to notice every movement, everything.
And it's a lot of, it plays into a lot of why people like talking in bed, because it's like that also helps kind of fuel, like descriptions help fuel like sexual fantasy.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. And then I also think because of all this, it's like must be a very vulnerable experience too, engaging in this.
Some people are probably pros, though.
Yeah. So Julian Dribble, whose work we're going to be discussing more in a second, he wrote this book about his experience in these kinds of virtual or tiny worlds back in the 1990s. And he sees cybersex as exposing a truth about real sex, that when it comes to sex, perhaps the body in question is not the physical one at all, but it's the psychic double, the body-like self-representation we carry around in our heads. And whether we present that body to another as a meat puppet or a word puppet is not nearly as significant a distinction as one might have thought.
Playing in mud and meat puppet are two of the craziest phrases.
And I guess that's sort of like echoing what we said earlier, but I really
like
it.
Well, I'm a genius.
Well, there you go. And now we're going to talk about the story, which Dribble reports on in what is a pretty famous essay in the history of like virtual reality. I think his name is Dibble, and I wrote Dribble in all of my notes. So if I slip up, my apologies, Julian.
I prefer Dribble, if it makes you feel better.
Yeah, because it's Dribble. His essay, A Rape in Cyberspace, was originally published in The Village Voice in the 90s, and it's a really fascinating read. Like, I would recommend it.
Oh, can I just say I love The Village Voice? They've been doing great work.
We'll be talking about The Village Voice in a later episode.
In about.
Okay, so I'm going to basically be summarizing the story that Dibble tells in his essay. So bear with me.
I'm simply sad.
sit. So the story takes place in Lambda Mu, which was a popular social moo. Remember, a moo is an object-oriented
Right, okay.
And it was popular in the 90s. And so one thing to just, like, know about even, like, social muds and moos.
That's so funny. God. I've been
writing these notes all week and then reading them out loud. I'm like,
well, the muds and moos.
Right, but of course. And like they're spelt out in all caps in my thing, so it feels different. But
muds and moos. Go for it, babe. Take it away.
Yeah, so an important thing to know about social muds and moos is that even though they're not fantasy based, a lot of the terminology from D&D and like the origins of muds are still used. So for example, there is a class of users with special abilities and authorities called wizards.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is like fun.
Sex wizards.
Yeah. I'm sure some of them were sex wizards. But it's sort of like the people who run and like operate and moderate these spaces are wizards and they have special powers. It's interesting to think about because they're playing and existing in the world. So it sets up a bit of like a hierarchical political system. And so at the time of this story, the wizards of Lambda Mu had decided to basically quit their jobs as social moderators because they were sick of people coming up to them and being like, can you make this happen with this user because they're doing this?
Oh my God, the Reddit mods, I'm like, those are people who just don't sleep, apparently. They're on people's asses.
It's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, they were basically like, we're done. And that kind of meant that the place went from like a monarchy to a lawless land.
Mayhem in the Mu.
Well... Okay, so Lambda Mu, it is set in a mansion, although, like, remember, everything you see on screen is just text, but, like, when you come on the game, you enter in, like, a cloak closet. It describes a coat closet to you, and then you basically make yourself leave the closet, and you go into different rooms.
You exit the closet.
Yes, but not in like a metaphorical sense. And
you come out of the closet is what I meant to say.
Yes, yes.
I'm exiting. People say when they're coming out.
On a minisode, Maya and I made this big joke about like what if people when they came out of the closet they said they were pivoting. Yeah. Like having a career pivot.
I'm pivoting.
But this is an inside joke for our patrons only.
Yeah, that's why you guys should subscribe. Okay.
For great content like that. Yeah, when you enter Lambda Mu, you're in a closet, you leave the closet, and you can go into different rooms. You can design your own room, and then there's like social gathering spaces like the living room. So the living room is kind of described as having a party-like atmosphere. There's always lots of people in there chatting with each other and interacting. One day, a character named Mr. Bungle enters the living room, and he is described as a clown dressed in cum-stained Harlequin garb, and he's wearing a belt made of mistletoe with a buckle that says, "Kiss me here, bitch."
Inventive.
Inventive.
Insidious.
Insidious, for sure. And he has with him a voodoo doll.
Okay. All right.
So this is important because a voodoo doll is an object players can program that basically allows them to control the written actions of another player. So like when I'm doing something on a Mu, like let's say someone says something to me and I'm laughing, it's like Hannah is laughing da 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 way, and then says, like, it's describing your actions as you put them in. So what he basically has, and I don't know how he was able to obtain this in the Mu, but he has the ability to override that. So he is writing the descriptions of other people's actions and saying what they're doing, even if the person behind the computer didn't say that.
So he really is making you a puppet.
So it's a voodoo doll.
A mud puppet.
Exactly. And so Bungle uses his voodoo doll.
Wait, also, I'm sorry, I just imagine having the coding abilities to be able to do that. Like, you're talented enough to do something like that, but you choose to code and program that.
And this is some foundational shit for the internet.
Like whoever invented the hacks on Sims.
I know, I really don't know how this stuff works. Not a woman in STEM. So Bungle basically uses his voodoo doll to essentially make other characters, like many of them are described as female or genderless, perform violent and sexual acts on him, themselves, and each other.
Oh my god.
So an example of the kind of stuff that would appear on screen as their descriptors is, as if against her will, Moondreamer jabs a steak knife up her ass, causing immense joy. You hear Mr. Bungle laughing evilly in the distance.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So basically, he's kind of come into this, like, social space and in front of a ton of, like, other users is making these characters be presented as doing those things.
Oh my god. It's evil genius wreaking havoc.
It's very insidious.
Yeah, it's very scary. I would be very disturbed by that.
I think, and people were. So this goes on until someone is able to find a wizard with the ability to trap Mr. Bungle in like a cage and make him stop.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
Because they originally banish him to another room, but the voodoo doll allows him to do it even from other rooms. So he's not in the living room anymore, and he's still controlling the actions of all these different players.
It's kind of crazy because it's like the realization of the world building, like losing control, because the whole point of world building is that you have control of everything.
Yeah.
And this concept of like losing control and this little agent of chaos operating in this world and making it so that you don't have control, and that's really fascinating.
And especially because, again, this is happening after the wizards basically were like, we don't want to deal with this shit anymore.
But it's like the wizards having to come in and like save everyone from it. Like it's like a twisted Dungeons and Dragons game coming to life.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I know. It is crazy.
Mr. Bungle.
And in the aftermath of what is called the Bungle Affair, the incident is called a rape by one of the people who he's done this to. And it should be noted that I don't think anyone was regarding it as being on par with real rape. But like within the world of the game where people have sex, then this would technically count as rape.
If it's mimicking life.
And if you're taking sex really seriously in the game, which a lot of people do, like we described, it can be a really like sensorial experience. To have that agency taken away is kind of like a jarring thing.
Yeah, it'd be freaky.
Yeah. And this basically led the lawless state of Lambda Mu to hold a town hall where they debated different political philosophies and like tried to come to some kind of conclusion about how to address players like Mr. Bungle, because basically one of the victims wanted him toted. And that's also something taken from Dungeons and Dragons. Toted means in Dungeons and Dragons, you're stripped of all your powers, but in this case, it means you're removed from the game. So that would basically be the death penalty for assault. And so it became like this really like philosophical debate beyond what you would assume would just be like a moderator coming in and kicking him out.
Oh my God, that is so fascinating.
Yeah. And so like he did end up being toted because like after a long debate for a while, Dibble describes like Bungle suddenly enters the room because he's still walking around the game the middle of a town hall. And they're kind of like, explain yourself, like you're a sociopath. And he's kind of just like, and it kind of like kills the mood a little bit until like a lot of people end up leaving. And then there's just a few more people squabbling. And then eventually he gets toted.
Oh my God, so interesting. I would love to know the identity of this person.
And we will get to that. Yeah. But the Bungle Affair is brought up a lot in early scholarship around virtual reality because it poses a lot of questions about how real world issues like sexual violence and gender and governance translates to virtual spaces. What's your read on the situation? Like, do you think the response of the users of Lambdamu was like proportionate to the events?
Yeah, I think if this guy's ruining the fun for everyone, kick him out of the game. And, like, I guess it is a death sentence within the rules of the game, but he also committed... I mean, that sounds like I believe in the death sentence. I don't.
You're a poli-sci major, like, give us your take.
Well, that is not what I studied. But I think him committing, like, a violent rape within the rules of the game would then justify him getting thrown out of it.
But then they're taking it seriously as a real world. So what they're doing is basically setting up that you could easily use the death penalty for things that in like real life would not be proportional to the death penalty.
That's a dangerous precedent. Yes. Is what you're saying. Yeah, I guess within the seriousness of the game, but they can't strip him of his powers. So it felt like kind of their only resort. Because what else can you do? Get rid of his account. He can probably make a new one.
And he does.
Well, yes. Lawless. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think he probably should have been kicked out just because making everyone feel weird. And because it's like the actual part of it is that he's ruining the fun. The people, they can't express themselves the way they want to.
Yeah.
If he was going around and saying these things to people and it was gross and freaky, but he wasn't actually like hijacking their usage of the game, then it'd be different. But because he's actually hijacking like the way that they can express themselves in the game, it's like, yeah, no one else is able to play the game, so the game becomes kind of not the game anymore.
But if this is a world where we're taking what he's done, we're treating it as rape, then does that not mean that, like, other actions are proportionate to their real-world equivalents?
Yeah, definitely.
So isn't it kind of like, it's not like he's just ruining the fun so you should kick him out. He's, like, doing this thing, and so how you treat him has a real-world equivalent.
It does to an extent. I think there is, like, a line, obviously. Like, I don't think it's one for one.
Yeah.
And I think that, for me, it's just the gameplay aspect of it is a bit hampered. I mean, I'm trying to think of what else would be equivalent that would justify someone getting kicked out in a level of severity to what he's doing.
No, and I guess there isn't. And, like, this is only if we're taking this world really seriously, which, of course, when you take a step back, you don't. You're kind of like,
Mr. Bungle, like, that's what you do.
Well, exactly. And, like, I'll tell you what they ended up doing moving on from this was they, without the wizards, they created like a system of democracy where they would have like popular votes on different issues and bring it to the wizards. And based off of the votes, the wizards would use their powers to like make those things happen.
Oh my God, fascinating. So that's the birthplace of democracy
basically
on the internet.
I mean, this Lambdamu is brought up a lot in scholarship talking about like governing online spaces. And then also talking about sex in online spaces.
Well, yeah, it feels like very early versions of Reddit mods and Discord mods,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And especially this was a time where I think people thought we might all end up in the metaverse, like, sooner or later.
Right.
Which we may have.
Still in the yeah. horizon.
And so they were like, well, this is setting grounds for, like, how we translate our world onto the computer.
Yeah, like, creating laws and rules, basically. And, like, I've often laugh about how seriously I find Reddit to be taken. But then again, it's like, the stuff that is born on Reddit does have real life implications. And so it's like precedent is important.
And so what I'll tell you about Mr. Bungle is that it's not that interesting. He was an NYU student fucking around in like a room full of his friends, kind of cheering him on, being like, yeah, do this, do that.
Oh, that's
like,
way less freaky than
yeah,
I thought it was.
Like he wasn't like some sadistic guy. And that kind of also plays into it. When you take a step back, you're like, this is some kid being a shithead. And yeah, he probably should have been kicked out. But he caused like serious kind of domino effect within this online world that other people took way more seriously than he did.
Could we say he bungled it?
I think also it's important to remember that because the people on MUDs were basically designing and cultivating the environments themselves, and like in the case of Lim Damu, which, yeah, like we said, became a democratic state later, the people were like in charge of moderating what took place there. So a social indiscretion or crime is like a big deal because it disrupts all of that work. But I would say that this kind of changed as we shifted into the 21st century and popular virtual worlds were run by corporations and companies.
Awesome.
And so just to quickly catch us up, later on, like, the graphics were incorporated into the kinds of systems that were originally created with MUDs. And they evolved into the games that, like, our generation grew up playing. So a lot of them are targeted towards adults or older teens, like Second Life or World of Warcraft, the way, like, MUDs were. Which I think you have to think about MUDs being spaces that were basically occupied by, like, adults who could, like, run computers and credit cards. Which
of course.
Is why all of this stuff seems a little, like, freer.
Well, also back in those days, like, the internet wasn't as accessible to younger people. Like, yeah. Just thinking about the way that the home computer was set up, they were harder to use.
Mm-hmm.
Adults usually had access to them over children in the house, you know, so I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
versus exactly. Now when kids, I mean, especially today, kids are like more technologically savvy than adults,
their parents,
and
yeah.
They have their own private like tools.
Yeah, and so like around the 2000s, a bunch of virtual worlds started popping up that it wasn't just like kids were going on them. They were specifically designed for younger teens and tweens, which includes like Wyville, Club Penguin, and Habbo Hotel, which is like the most popular of all of these types of sites.
Well, yes.
And so Habbo Hotel was launched in 2000 by Finnish company Sulake?
Oh.
Sorry to the Finnish.
Tough language.
I know I never went on Habbo Hotel, but you did. And I was wondering if you could describe Habbo a little bit, what people do on there, and your experiences on the site.
It sounds really similar to what you were describing with the Moo, with Lam Damu, except it's like all visualized. So like, I don't remember too many of the specifics, but basically you have this like little avatar. The animation's really bad. Like it's these little kind of block-like avatars. Really
pixel.
Very pixely. And I think somewhat partly intentionally, but like just the look of the game. But pixely, you can kind of design how you look, but it's not very specific and detailed. And then you have these like kind of different rooms that you enter through. I think, yeah, you have like the entrance room, then you have the main chat room, and then you can go off into other different rooms. And it is a chat room, but it's like an actual chat room where two characters are standing next to each other and you can choose to speak to the other one. And then it'll create these chat blurbs. So when you're talking, your little character will have a chat blurb that you can read. And so if someone's saying something, you read their chat blurb, they read yours. And then I think there are other little things you can do, like fun things you can wear, little add-ons, but I can't really remember what they are.
Did people like make friends on Habbo?
Yeah, I think you can make friends. I don't remember if I did because I wasn't there for that reason, but I was not there to make friends. but I think some people were more serious Habbo users, yeah, where they had like actual communities.
Okay.
In the way that you would on Club Penguin.
Right, yeah. There's also a darker side to Habbo Hotel. In 2012, Channel 4, the British news station, did a 2-month-long investigation into Habbo Hotel where they had a producer pose as an 11-year-old girl and play on the site 50 different times. And the producer says that when she'd log into the site, she would almost immediately be met with sexual messages and requests to meet on other platforms like Skype or MSN. She also reported finding rooms that were strip clubs and like sexy nightclubs. And a lot of the messages that she would get would say things like, I'm going to do X to you, which reminded me of the Bungle Affair, where like one instance of this was such a big deal in their community.
So I was that 11-year-old girl. I was like a full-on child when I was on Habbo Hotel. And my story is that I got a life ban for sexting on Habbo Hotel. Like, I went on there and I sexted with strangers.
And for how long were you doing this?
No, not that long. Like, it wasn't like it was a daily ritual or anything, but when I did go on, it was like, I don't know, it was just like, I think I was just curious and like probably a kid who had these thoughts and feelings but didn't understand how to, I don't know, it was like an outlet for expression, I guess. Yeah. Just like outing myself right now. But like, I don't know, I think a lot of kids did that. And yeah, so I would like talk to strangers who I probably in my head assumed were kids, or you don't have a conception of age at all when you're a child. Like, you don't
No, you
think
you
about
don't.
It. You're not thinking about it. And also, like, you're not thinking that there's a real person behind it, honestly, half the time. So, like, I would be, like, engaging in these sexual conversations, which were probably similar to the AOL Pen 15 conversations, like, ridiculous from my end.
Like, I am kissing you.
Making out with you now. And yeah, you'd put it in stars. So, like, when you're talking, you talk. And then when you have an action, you put it in between two asterisks. And so then you describe what you're doing. And oh my god, I'm sure what I was saying didn't really resemble sex very much. Because I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But like, I'd be swearing or saying sexual words probably. And then so I got banned, like a life ban from it. Because they were like, okay, you need to stop doing that.
What year would this have been?
2007 or 8, probably. Okay. Well, I would have been like probably grade 5 or okay. 6. But thinking about it, it's like the people on the other end likely could have been adults. And I don't think I said I was much older either. I don't even think I was trying to appear older. I was just on there.
Well, yeah. I mean, the producer was saying that she was 11, like, in the conversations. And then on the news broadcast, they went on, like, the newscaster and immediately ended up in a conversation, like, while they were filming, where someone was trying to get them to go on Skype, which I guess when you were on, were people asking that? Or was it, like, kind of before Skype was as popular?
I'm sure a few people were like, oh, hey, do you want my email? Or like, trying to take it elsewhere. But I wasn't like a naive kid.
Yeah.
Like, I also was aware of Stranger Danger. Growing up in the early 2000s, it was a huge time for Stranger Danger. Like, conversations about the internet being scary were like the dominant issue of the week conversation.
Yeah.
Again, Degrassi had an episode about it.
Every year my school had like a cyber safety like assembly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like we didn't have the language like a lot of us. So I think I wouldn't have done it anyways. But one of my friends met her boyfriend on Omegle. She was talking on Omegle and she was in grade 6, or she would have been in grade 7 at this point. I was in grade 6, and she was talking to this boy and he was from Florida and she ended up meeting him. It luckily turned out that he was also her age and like their parents set it up. But their parents just wanted to make sure it was like safe, so they were there the whole time kind of thing. When you try to discipline a kid about it, they're probably going to go in the other direction and go harder. So instead, I think they tried to kind of make sure they were there the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like a huge thing.
Wow, that is crazy. See, okay, thing about me is that I shared one computer with my entire family that was always in like our common like living spaces. So like, I couldn't really do a lot on the internet, right?
No, that makes sense. Mine was also in a den area that my dad shared with me. Sometimes he just wasn't in there.
Yeah, fair enough, girl. So one thing that this made me kind of think about, I mean, it seems like obviously there were moderators working because you got banned from Habbo Hotel in 2005. From my understanding, like, Habbo's model of moderating started off as being a lot of, like, community moderation when it was smaller. And you'd have people who volunteered as hotel managers or something. And they were kind of in the chats, like, reporting stuff. But then they got rid of that in 2005 for a few years. And it was mostly just employees of the company that were, like, moderating and overseeing it. But one, I think it's really strange that, like, in this space, they were able to, like, run stuff like strip clubs and like that there was the world building possibilities of like having your characters wearing bras and shit.
Yeah, you could wear bras and I'm pretty sure there was bedrooms that you could go to. Like you'd be like, can you come to the bedroom?
Yeah, they had kissing booths that would shake when you entered.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's crazy if you're trying to be like, we want this to be a good space for kids.
Yeah, I didn't realize Habbo even was for kids. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it was the most popular with kids.
But was it aimed at kids or was it just popular with kids?
Yeah, like it was like ages, I think 12 or 13 and up or something, but it was like young teens.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I would assume that would be a lot of its demo base.
And the graphics are kind of childish.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was also like wondering if maybe because Habbo like generates money and has a company overseeing it, like rather than a grassroots built community, like on a mud, that impacts the like the responses to situations like this. I don't think they care as much about keeping the balance of the world at peace because it's just tons of people on it for money.
Yeah, and they can restore the balance. Like they're just, they own it. Yeah.
They can like plop you out, but they can also like let a lot of stuff slide. Mm-hmm. And somebody experiencing some kind of like harassment online doesn't like carry the same weight because it's not really impacting like a community, which is interesting. After Channel 4 reported their findings and a major investor dropped out, Habbo paused chat functions and then started asking users for their input on how to move forward. And it seems like they've have quite a few measures in place now for dealing with these kinds of situations, but it wasn't entirely clear. And of course, like Habbo is one example of what was probably happening on a lot of these sites in some form. But I do remember that, like, you know, on other sites that we were on as kids that had some chatting and socializing functions, like there was more child-friendly images and things in place. Like Club Penguin.
Yeah, I remember being like, that's for babies.
And so I used to go on Club Penguin and I would go and pick up boyfriends and then we'd like go to the pizza restaurant and sit and go on a date and then one of us would get bored and like log off.
That's so wholesome.
And then I'd go and find a different boyfriend.
Was I just like a sexually depraved child? Maybe. Like, what was wrong with me? Promise you, I think I tried to go to Club Penguin and sexed there and like immediately got kicked.
Well, I got banned from Club Penguin because my brother went on and said a swear word, and I was so devastated. I think it's the only time he got grounded.
You were such a little giddy-giddy.
Yes, I was. But, like, I know that for a lot of other kids, like, the appeal of these websites was that kind of stuff. And, like, even me going on Club Penguin, I was like, oh, I'm getting a boyfriend. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think the appeal for a lot of these things as kids is, like, the fantasy element because... One, you're a kid, you live with your parents. You're also a kid, so no, you cannot have sex, and you shouldn't, probably. And, like,
yeah.
It's just not even in the cards, really. But, again, kids are starting to have those thoughts at that age. They just can't do anything about it. So these chat rooms have this appeal where they can then explore these ideas in a way that they think is not harmful. Yeah. Obviously, kids lack a good measurement of risk in general. So, like, there's that. And, like, maybe not have the knowledge that this could be dangerous or predatory. But, like, that is the appeal of them. You can't do this stuff because you're a kid. So, you can pretend to do it.
And it's just so interesting. There's, like, no way that you could, as a company... I mean, one, there's no way that you could create a space where kids could kind of do that kind of thing and guarantee that adults wouldn't be lurking on there. But then also, there's no way, like, a company could... invest in the formation of like a kids only space for that, because that would be that would be so weird. But it's true that it, like, at the same time, like, there should be safe spaces for kids to, I don't know, it's so weird,
it's kind of impossible. I think that there is no way to be able to do that in a safe way unless they started IDing people, and that's fucking weird.
They're weird,
like, yeah, kids, then, go enter this online sex club as long as you're under 12. Like, what?
Ew.
Yeah, no.
But then it's like, I don't know, I guess, like, the solution has just been to, like, highly moderate everything on the internet.
I actually wonder if kids still do this kind of thing. Like, I just don't know.
I mean, kids go on, like, Roblox. Is that similar?
I think there is, like, an interactive function on it. I think most video games now have an interactive online function. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, you see the kind of stuff that gets said in gaming chat rooms, and so... I think there is a little moderation on there.
Yes, true.
So maybe something like that. But, like, I don't know.
It's such a weird line of the internet is so out of, like, our control in so many ways. And then we often complain about, like, you know, on TikTok, you can't say certain words. People always say corn.
Yeah, there's a lot of censorship on TikTok in terms of being able to say those
because
things.
Because it's technically an app for teens or something.
Well, it started as dominated by kids and teens. Now it's like adults are on there, but that was a product of the pandemic, really.
And same with, like, YouTube. We've talked about YouTube censorship, and I guess it's just like, where do you strike a balance of, like, making sure spaces are safe for kids, but also, I don't know, it sounds like what was going on in MUDs in the early internet days before kids were really on the internet was kind of a cool, beautiful thing for the most part.
Yeah, it's kind
of
awesome.
Not to, like, completely romanticize it. I'm sure there were flaws and issues, but it's like, where can adults just be safe from kids and kids safe from adults?
I don't know if you have ever heard of this, but it was like this thing that went viral, and I don't know if it was posted by the person actually doing it or if it was posted by someone else, but these videos on YouTube, and I think it was called like Daniel from Second Life or something. I can't remember his name. It was like some guy's name, and it was this guy from Second Life, and it was this guy who would go on Second Life and basically troll everyone because the people who were using it at the time took it very seriously. Like, it is their life, and like, they're really playing by the rules of the game.
I downloaded Second Life for this episode to try and go on one of these types of things, and I kept getting kicked out of rooms because I think I wasn't supposed to be there. It was
rude.
Me.
They knew you'd wreak havoc.
Yeah.
And he just like goes on and is intentionally obtuse. Like, they'll be trying to talk to him about things, and he just has like the funniest responses, like the most obtuse responses, and they'll start getting really pissed off. And so every video is like some user getting so mad at Daniel. It's really funny, and they were so entertaining, and I can't find them to show you.
And so do we know who Daniel is?
I don't remember if it was the guy who ran the YouTube account or if it was just a guy that people would encounter and post the videos of, but it was so funny. It was so funny. But it is like, it did highlight how seriously adults take those games, you know?
Yeah.
There's that episode from The Office where Dwight is using Second Life because he's, like, in a bad place. And there's all that footage of him, like, soaring around the video game.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, like, he's flying because he's sad.
Yes. And then on it, like, Jim goes on Second Life and makes himself a sports writer and a guitar player and all of these things.
Yeah, and Pam's like,
I think we should close off this episode with a discussion about the pandemic.
And what about it?
Well, for one, Habbo Hotel saw a huge growth in users during the pandemic.
I went on there with my partner at the time, and we hung out with his friends on there in, like, a virtual room.
Well, the film festival I helped host, like, did a little event on Habbo Hotel. We had, like, a little space, and I kept getting stressed out because I don't know if it was always like this, but you can video chat. Like, you can have that function. So if you get close to someone, like, you could all have a group chat or whatever. And so I kept, like, being like, I don't want to end up in weird one-on-one conversations with people I kind of know.
And so you have to, like, video chat them. Yeah. Hear them.
So I was like, oh my god, please no.
You're just standing in the corner the entire time.
Well, yeah, I think I logged off kind of early because I got social anxiety.
No, that's terrible. I would hate that. That's so funny. It wasn't a chat room, but I had this thing because I was in school at the time where we had to kind of like do this meet and greet with our potential supervisors, which obviously would have taken place at like a wine and cheese kind of thing with our program. But because it was a pandemic, it was a Zoom where you're in like one big chat room and then it splinters off into smaller chat rooms and you have to talk to the other people in it. And it was so...
Universities did a lot of that, I think.
I did meet my supervisor that way, but...
And your soulmate.
And also my soulmate.
It just sounded like you were going to say, I did meet my soulmate.
And I did meet my soulmate that way.
Should we tell the IMBs? Okay, so in the pandemic, you're really bored.
This is really early days, too. When you're bored, not in like a existential way, you're bored in like a, oh, this is kind of inconvenient.
But you're bored in a way where you're like, you haven't kind of just accepted life as it is, and...
The new normal.
Yeah. And you would like try and come up with like fun ways to socialize with your friends while like drinking a sad glass of wine on your computer.
No, literally. Like, so one night, Hannah and I, with our friend, we watched Laguna Beach remotely. Like, we all tried to watch it on this platform. It was some party platform. I can't remember what it was, but like this platform where we all watched it together, and it was so hard to watch. Like, it was so glitchy.
Yeah.
And then another night, Hannah and I... And a couple other friends, one of my friends was like in Italy or something, one was somewhere else, like we weren't all together, went on IMVU. And if you guys don't remember what IMVU is, it was this thing where- It's still around. At the time when we were younger, it was kind of scary. Like, it had these banner ads everywhere.
And, yeah.
With really, really sexed up characters, like these early baddies, like huge boob characters in like really current outfits, like very like on trend outfits.
I confuse it how people put outfits on there because they had really trendy little outfits online.
Super impressive. Yeah. So they'd always have that, and I remember kind of being like allured by it, but I didn't understand what it was. And then finally I got it when I was younger, and like I used it a couple times because I was apparently addicted to chat rooms. But
I mean, no, I love it. I never used it until this, but
yeah. But basically the graphics are really good, like the avatars are very well designed basically and very specific, and so you can kind of do whatever with it. Like, you can make them look however you want. It's like very customizable in every way, shape, and form. And then you can like choose really trendy outfits to wear, whatever hair, and then you kind of go into these chat rooms that are very strange. Like, they're kind of clubby, but then they're also kind of like phantasmagoric. Like, they're a little bit strange and fantasy-ish. And so one night Hannah and I, our two friends, like decided to go on. We made our avatars and we were in this room talking.
What were our names? Were
mine was Richard Vixen.
Richard Vixen, and mine was Ronald Bagan.
Oh, I actually have a picture that I posted on Instagram from this that I'll post it on our promotional.
Maya was going up to different people and she's like,
anyone heard of Watergate?
Yeah.
It was fun for the first like half hour, and then it got hella weird.
I loved designing your avatar. Like, I loved Stardoll as a kid because I loved making myself look cool and like putting on outfits.
We're girls. We love paper dolls.
Look, when we went on, we were bored and needed excitement and socializing, and life really was dark. And it would have been like kind of sad and lame, but not creepy if we had been able to go on a space and known that everyone else there was an adult, right? And it would be super cool and chill if kids could go on the kid spaces.
And know that everyone was a kid.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, like if someone can figure out a way to just separate kids and adult internets, that'd be great.
Online internet child adult segregation.
And bring back Club Penguin.
No, that's weird for after we were like, let kids have space.
I think there's like beauty to be found in these chat rooms. I think that the word chat room already almost has a negative connotation because of all this. Like, you know, we went on Chat Roulette growing up.
Bad place.
The crazy place. And they have negative connotations inherently because of this Stranger Danger era and very founded fears. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I think what you brought out in this episode was just that there is also a beauty to it if it is purely consensual, purely age appropriate. I wonder what the tech utopians would think of where we're at today.
Yeah. Maybe we should send all kids to boarding school and give them a different internet.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.